The Jerry Doyle Show.
Anita Finley on the program with us, author of the book Dirty Words on Clean Skin, 4 months, number one position, Amazon's Women in Politics list. She's a blogger, she's an EpicTimes.com contributor, and she's an actress, and we are calling her on Freaky Friday because she's got a callback. That's what I'm really interested in right now, Anita. I understand from Brad that you're on a callback for what? Is it a television show? Is it for a movie? Is it for a commercial? What do we got going on here?
No, it's just for a commercial, and I can't tell you anything about it, but let's put it this way. I have to look very frumpy today.
Very frumpy? What do you mean just a commercial? I mean, you take a look at some of the runs these people have had. Jack in the Box, Flow for Progressive.
Oh, absolutely.
How long has she been doing that?
I don't know, 5 years, 6 years? I have no idea. I mean, Lord knows, I've had some commercial campaigns that have just paid for my house. So, you know, I really can't argue with that. But I just mean that people, when they hear about, oh, what's she working on? You know, they typically don't get very excited about a commercial, except for I was shopping in the Beverly Center for shoes. And this was at a time when I had 4 different nationals running. And this lovely woman walked up to me in the shoe store and said, you know, I watch your commercials all the time. And it makes
nice.
It sound like when the programs are on, I leave. But when your commercials are on, then I watch.
isn't that kind of cool, though, you know, in a way?
It was very sweet. I appreciated it very much. I don't expect to be recognized. I'm just out there in the rank and file. So I took it very kindly, believe me.
Brad just put up on my AP that the Flow campaign started in 2008. That's a 6-year run. That's nice. What do you think she's pulling down in the fifth year of something like that? Because at a certain point, you know, don't they own you?
They do own you, but you know, this has to be a buyout in terms of her exclusivity, because you don't see her on anything else, and she better be getting in the millions, because you know, over this amount of time, and I'm sure she is with the number of spots she's cut, because,
right.
You know, I don't know that will make her unhirable because of the kind of personality. It's like that woman who used to do the, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature
right.
kind of thing. So
right.
I assume it's going to be something like that. So she may yet come up with another character, but I suspect that she will not be known for anything as well as she'll be known for this for the rest of her life. So she better be cleaning up on it, because sometimes it absolutely makes you unhirable in terms of other people's products because you're so identifiable with this.
Like the guy with the glasses in the Verizon commercials. Can you hear me now?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you saw that guy today, you'd go, oh, that's the Verizon guy, right?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And so you can get kind of pigeonholed. So this is not just, you know, you're standing there auditioning for a commercial. These are also business decisions that you have to make because, you know, is this something that I want to be identified with for, quote, the rest of my life?
Oh, absolutely. And believe me, there are certain jobs that I've turned down for that reason. But at this point, a lot of that pride goes out the window. I mean, the work market, as far as actors are concerned, is very much like the rest of the economy, where people are doing things they didn't think they'd be doing, and they're grateful to be working. So, you know, it's very much like that in Hollywood today, too. I mean, all you have to do is look at television and see film actors who never would have been caught dead doing television. Now they can't wait to get a series. It's a very, or even 3 lines as a guest star on some TV show. So it's a very different world out there.
Do you think it's going to go back to more content program than reality program? Because I think in a certain amount with regard to the economy, reality programming is much cheaper to produce. I mean, I'm sure you've been on commercial shoots where just for a 30-second commercial, I mean, they'll spend millions of dollars. But they can produce reality TV for 50 or 60 cents on the dollar. And it seems as if they've made monetary decisions rather than creative decisions. Is reality TV, as far as what you see in Hollywood, is it still strong? Is it fading? Is it getting stronger?
It seems to me that it's fading a little bit. I hope it fades out altogether. And this is no offense to the people who create this stuff, but I, you know, speaking as an actor, selfishly, they really have ruined the business. And they did it as a monetary decision. But I think it also coarsens the culture, because it sort of gets us to this kind of Jerry Springer, you know, women ripping each other's hair out
and
you know, the bachelor and the bachelorette and people whoring themselves around. And I find that it just cheapens us all together and creates a more of a voyeuristic attitude than we already have with the advent of social media. So the less we have to deal with that sort of thing, the better. I mean, you know, better you should have escapist entertainment, and once in a while you actually have a script that illuminates a subject matter that is something we are loath to look at, and then maybe we even learn something as a result. I would rather have that and watch great actors. I mean, watch House of Cards, for instance. Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, these people are brilliant. You know, this is something that's worth your time. I just don't see that people eating worms and you know, throwing themselves under buses. I don't really see how that's worth my time or money. So,
but when you take a look at it, and it's the chicken and the salmonella egg. Are they making it because we're watching it, or are we watching it because they're making it? You know, that kind of a thing.
I think it's both, and I get angry with some of my actor friends out here because some of them are addicted to reality television, too. And I'd say, you know, no offense, but do you realize you're taking bread out of your own mouth and out of the mouth of your own family? Because the more of this stuff that they produce, that's that many less shows that they produce where they need real actors to do it. And I just don't think there's any substitute for that kind of talent. And something else that I heard that was very disturbing was even with commercials are using a lot of non-union talent because some actors are doing what's called going, this is an internal term, going FICOR, financial core, where they don't want to pay dues, so they're still sort of members of the union, but they can't vote. And this way they can do new union or non-union work, and that has cut down a lot of work substantially. Now, the thing is that most people, they look at actors and they just see the millionaires. They see the Angelina Jolies or Brad Pitts or Tom Cruise or whoever's making mega bucks. But most people are just lucky if they can feed their families and, you know, and keep their kids in school. And they're not making those kinds of dollars, and they're trying to get their pension and health paid for and so on. So it really, you know, their job is auditioning and hoping that they go out enough that they can book enough to make a living, and they're doing a lot of other stuff on the side. So, you know, I'm talking about the bulk of people in this business are in the rank and file, and so I think that they would agree that content programming is better than this reality nonsense.
Yeah, it's kind of like radio. Do you need your house painted, by the way? Anyway, just kidding.
I may.
Okay, well,
paint the house. Nobody will paint the house better than my husband. That's the problem. He's such a perfectionist. So
is he?
I just can't get him. I can't get him to put on the apron anymore. He's like, I'm tired, honey. I just can't.
Let's just. I'm at the point in my life, Anita, where I've just come to the conclusion I can't hurt myself writing a check. You know.
There you go.
I could try to do this. I could try to do that. But I always find that my learning curve takes a hard right through my wallet. I mean, I'd like to think, like when I Josh Lucas, who does the voiceovers for the Home Depot. I mean, he's just great voiceovers. He's also on that TV show with Deborah Messing. The new show? Anyway, I can't think of it. But it's a good show. Anyway, I listen to those commercials. I watch those commercials and I go, yeah, I can tile the backsplash of the kitchen. And I'm going, I'll just call somebody. I'll just call somebody to do it. You know, you brought up Angelina Jolie, and I wanted to just get a quick take on that Sony hack that's going on, because I'm hearing that could cost Sony $100 million. How is something like that possible? That you know, we come to get a little bit of cat fighting back and forth between Amy Pascal at Sony and Scott Rudin and Angelina Jolie, and I keep hearing them saying that this potentially with the hack of the emails, that this could cost Sony $100 million. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that that's the price tag, but I think, unfortunately, you know, they revealed themselves not only in what they do when the camera isn't looking, in terms of they're not so politically correct when they think nobody's listening. And so it sort of revealed the hypocrisy that we have on both sides of the aisle. And so that was just a small microcosm of the same. But worse still, what I'm concerned about is not what they said, but what they're doing, in that they pay women less than they pay men, and male executives are making $1 million more a year when they're doing the exact same job. I mean, I think that is going to cost them in a lot of other ways going down the road, and it should.
Right. When you talk about they're not as politically correct as most people think them to be, I think a lot of people would be of the belief, Anita, that everybody that they know of in Hollywood is uber evolved and uber sensitive and uber kind and understanding, and that that kind of maybe racism or sexism or voyeurism would never be a part of their lexicon. Do you think is this a one-off in Hollywood, or is Hollywood acting, so to speak, in what it is that they portray?
You know what? I think in all fairness, Jerry, this is really, it was great that this happened simply because it illuminates for all of us how bad an idea it is when you stereotype anybody. And you know that I hate labels, whether it's right. on the left or right, whether in entertainment or politics. I think it makes very clear that you cannot, the limits are not where you think they are, and you cannot make these assumptions about this person is going to believe this one is progressive and this one believes in equal this, that, and the other, and somebody on the right only believes this. You cannot do that. And I think you really have to take people at face value and not believe, oh, this person is bad politically or otherwise because my friend, you know, Edsel told me so. I better, you know, go out there and do my own homework. I better look behind the green curtain, as it were, and find out, oh, well, what does he say when nobody thinks they're listening? You know, right. And then you find out who somebody really is, and you see what their character is, and that should tell you whether you want to invest with or in that person.
And Amy Pascal said, you know, with regard to the comments that she and Rudin were making back and forth with Obama's visit at Katzenberg's home in November 2013, saying, you know, do you think I should ask him if he liked Django? What about 12 years? What about Think Like a Man? What about The Butler? Hey, what about comedian Kevin Hart? I mean, those are, obviously are stereotypes. I mean, they should have gone all the way back and just said, hey, you know, what does he think about Roots? But
it was very rude. It was very rude and in very poor taste. But, you know, that just shows you that if you ever saw them in a public place, they'd be the first person putting the, you know, the biggest contribution in the plate for whoever their political party is supposed to be. And I assume that's Democrats.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
That's what I mean. You can't take any of this stuff at face value. And by the same token, on the Republican side, people have made a lot of, you know, you have the Todd Akins and the Richard Murdochs and the people who've made these horrible comments. Well, you can't assume that everybody on that side believes as they do either. You know,
let me ask you, be careful
about it.
Let me ask you if you believe this. If it wasn't Amy Pascal and it wasn't Scott Rudin, but let's say it was Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch, and this kind of an exchange was revealed. Amy Pascal said, I want to accept responsibility for these stupid, callous remarks. That's a quote from her. Do you not think that if it was Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes, that they wouldn't be able to get away with stupid, callous, that it would be immediately labeled racist?
I don't know. You know, perhaps it would. I mean, I think that that's the knee-jerk tendency. But there have been things that Bill Maher, arguably a darling of the left, I mean, he has said some, I mean, I think of him as a misogynist and he's horrid and has said so many horrible things that you could say were very disrespectful toward the president, even though he's obviously worked to get him reelected and spent $1 million on a super PAC that was working to get President Obama reelected. And he made a comment one night on his show saying, you know, I think the president should go all gangsta. I mean, you want to talk about a stereotype.
Right.
I think that's very insulting to President Obama. And I think that, you know, he gets away with that sort of thing all the time. So is there a double standard? Yeah, but look at, you know, we can take this in another arena. Look at all the sexist comments that are made and how often they get a pass. And, oh, ladies, lighten up. And we're supposed to let that go when, meanwhile, it really does have a deep effect on us. Because when somebody's making a lot of money as a woman speaker, aha, namely Hillary Clinton, we're worried about, well, why is she getting such high fees? I have never heard anybody give a damn whether a man gets high fees when he's speaking someplace. They assume he's worth it, and that's what the market will bear. So
yeah.
It's very easy for us to say, well, it's okay when so-and-so does it, but it's not okay when this person does it. And what, you know, Amy Pascal and Scott Rudin, what this should serve is just to point out our own biases. I'm not really worried about what they're doing because I don't know these people. I'll probably never meet them. Who cares? It's important for me to remember that anybody, you know, can be captured in an off moment. So let me check myself at the door. How am I behaving? Let me take responsibility for my behavior.
I've gotten so engrossed in the conversation, I haven't even gotten around to your latest piece at Epoch Times, The Terror in the Torture Report. And it's, I've got like a minute left. It's not going to do any justice to even get into it. Could we revisit that when we have more time to do that? Because to give you 60 seconds to get into a really good piece, I think does it a disservice.
No, I think that, you know, there's so much to be said about the CIA report that was revealed. I'd be happy to come back early next week if you want to talk about it.
That would be great.
Something that has, it has a lot of legs, and this is something that really speaks to how we wish to be perceived as a nation and who we are. So, of course, I'd be delighted to come back and talk to you about it some more.
That would be great because, you know, and a lot of people are trying to write about a show that you were on, 24, and saying that shows like that have affected us to think that torture is the way to go, and that if you're a fan of 24, you're more predisposed to agree with the enhanced interrogation techniques or torture or whatever it is that you want to call it.
I think it's nonsense. I think the reality of that is that fear is what turns people one way or another. In the name of fear and keeping ourselves safe, people can be induced to do all sorts of things that they would not do otherwise, and to look the other way towards heinous behaviors that otherwise they would never condone. I think that that's a much more realistic assessment of why people would condone torture or this kind of behavior than whatever is going on any TV show.
Are you going into the callback right now?
Not right this second, no, but I needed to be on this side of town because I
didn't
dare be stuck in the valley. So
absolutely. Well, break a leg, as they say in the industry. Anita Finley with us on the program. Check out her book, Dirty Words on Clean Skin, 16 weeks, number one position on Amazon Women in Politics list. And until we have a chance to get back with her, check out her piece at epictimes.com, The Terror in the Torture Report. Thanks, Anita. Have a great weekend.
Always my pleasure. I'll see you next week. Take care.
Look forward to it. Great. Thanks. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
The Jerry Doyle Show.